Hello, this is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and it's the 30th of November 2011 here in Japan, where it's 6 in the morning, but it's 4 p.m. in the evening over in the United States, where I'm joined by Mark Morano of ClimateDepot.com. Mark Morano, it's great to have you on the program again today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, James. Happy to be here.
Well, I'm happy to have you here because obviously so much is developing in the climate change world. And for listeners who might not be aware of ClimateDepot.com, of course, I would wholeheartedly direct them to it as a great resource on all of the scams and schemes that are going on in the climate science or climatology world, as I like to call it. And ClimateDepot.com is the one-stop shop for all of this information. And of course, the number one item on the agenda these days is ClimateGate 2.0. So for people out there who perhaps haven't heard about this yet, can you just give us an overview of what happened last week?
Right. Well, what happened was, first of all, 2 years ago to the day, in November, they had ClimateGate 1.0, and that was a leak from the University of East Anglia, which happens to be the center of the upper echelon of the United Nations scientists who put out these climate panel reports, the ones that shared the Nobel Prize with former Vice President Al Gore, Nobel Prize for politics, not for science. And they released all these emails, which they had, looks like they had prepared for a Freedom of Information Act request, but they didn't have to release them for that. And so someone who worked there, an employee who was fed up with the global warming industry, leaked these out. And there were thousands of emails back in 2009. This became known as ClimateGate, and this was devastating. It showed that behind the scenes, top scientists like Phil Jones, Michael Mann, Kevin Trenbeth, we're all creating a narrative of man-made global warming by excluding information and studies and scientists that did not fit their preconceived ideas. And they were going after journal editors, and they were threatening other scientists. They were destroying evidence. They were telling each other to delete files, despite the fact that, in the case of Phil Jones, I believe it was 19 million, Michael Mann, 6 million people. These were well-funded from the taxpayer dollar, and they weren't following the rules. One analyst said this was scientists went to bed with activists, environmental activists, and the media, and all three had a very good time, and that's what we found. Now, ClimateGate 2.0 just came out last week, and it's more of the same. It's actually the same. It looks like it's the same from the same batch of emails, but they're all new and never before seen. And interestingly enough, in many cases, a lot of the denials the first time around and the explanations of trying to explain away their bad behavior, we're now seeing much more evidence of it this time around. And we're finding evidence of the ClimateGate scientists. Again, these are the top UN scientists talking about things like tropical cyclone studies and admitting that the other studies were contrary to that, and talking about how they're going to exclude them and how they may find some scientists who can do a report that would fit right in line with what they're trying to do. This was nothing more, and these new emails are proving that the entire man-made global warming activist community were nothing more than salesmen piecing together a sales presentation, hyping all the positives, eliminating all the negatives, playing on people's emotions. These were professional salesmen at their core. These were not scientists.
Well, that's unfortunately the case, and it's more and more clear that that is the case from these emails. And for people who haven't looked into them yet, I would suggest they do so. And there are a number of websites where you can go and access the database of all these emails. And some of the ones that are coming out are just incredible, like one that you've just posted today on ClimateDepot.com. This one called Wiggly to Briffa, Are You Hiding Something? In which Tom Wiggly presses Keith Briffa to respond to hockey stick debunker Steve McIntyre. And he says simply, Keith, see the last item, why don't you just give these people the raw data? Are you hiding something? Your apparent refusal to be forthcoming sure makes it look as though you are. And that's yes. One of the many, many examples, but a very straightforward one.
Yes, and what you find is this, and this is one of the biggest shocks, well, not to the skeptics, but to a lot of the public, is that this image they had of unanimity, the idea that they all agreed, is shattered. We have, you know, people, the warmest versus warmest scientists, they're calling each other's work pathetic. They're going after each other's work. They're, as you just said, they're implying that they're hiding stuff. They're going after talking about they're exaggerating stuff. They're talking back and forth quite harshly to each other in a number of these emails. And yet when they go to the public, they act as though there's no disagreement. And these are fundamental disagreements, things like the hockey stick, which was the graph produced by Michael Mann from Penn State University, by the way. And by the way, Penn State University, the president who is now deposed over this, the pedophile sex scandal was the one that assured us that Michael Mann, the scientist, you know, had an above board investigation, that he's all clean, the same guy that basically covered up for the Jerry Sandusky scandal. So this is a corruption that goes beyond global warming in many of these cases, and it comes down to cash cows. And in the case of all these alleged independent investigations into the first Climategate, what we find is it was the global warming industry exonerating the global warming industry. And analysts who looked at the Penn State investigation of Michael Mann basically said you couldn't come to a bigger farce if you tried, that it was beyond anything you could even parody in terms of how they conducted that investigation. But, of course, the media lapped it up. And one of the other shocking things we're finding out here is people like Andrew Revkin of the New York Times, he was a member of the Climategate team. I mean, this was a reporter with the New York Times who went back and forth lamenting with Climategate scientists in these emails that Al Gore didn't win the presidency because we would have had action on global warming. This is Andrew Revkin of the New York Times asking them of the best way to present information, asking about whether they should be hyping global cooling and global warming at the same time, talking to these scientists as though he was a communication advisor to them and they to him. And he was on their short list when they wanted to get out a study, when they wanted to get out an attack on a skeptic. Andrew Revkin of the New York Times was there, willing, ready, and able. And he even got criticized for including skeptical physicist Fred Singer in one of his articles, and Revkin said, oh, no need to worry, because he wasn't in the print edition, he was only in the online. I mean, seriously working with them as a team member. Now, this is supposed to be the independent media. So this is just stuff. We're just scratching the surface right now, James. There's so much stuff. We have a government scientist saying that quantifying climate sensitivity from real-world data can't even be done using present-day data. This is what they're saying behind the scenes, that they don't know the sensitivity of CO2. They can't even figure that out in private email. They admit this, but in public, they claim the science is all settled and the debate's over. And they will say absurd things like, this is as settled as gravity, as issues like gravity and other things. And yet privately, they admit it's nonsense. Phil Jones admits in these emails that this idea of a 2-degree Celsius limit on temperatures, which you hear a lot of the warmers talk about by keeping the rise of CO2, is pure nonsense. It's a mythical number made up out of thin air, and it's a political position, nothing to do with science. And it's just so fun to read all these, because you see what they really are like, and you find out that this is a con from beginning to end. The IPCC, which is nothing more than a political lobbying organization masquerading as a science group, and it's pathetic to still see reporters like Associated Press, Seth Borenstein, still every time he writes about the IPCC, the Nobel Prize-winning IPCC. It was a political prize shared with Al Gore for activism, political activism, and raising awareness. And somehow this is relevant to their scientific reports. Each scientist picked by governments. And the Climategate emails expose this beautifully. And 2.0 is just devastating now. It's filling in all the blanks and all the gray areas we had from Climategate 1. And what's even more joyful and an even bigger victory for science is there's thousands of more emails waiting in the wings from this whistleblower, who now many warmists are saying they're not responding to the substance of these emails. They're saying this whistleblower at East Anglia University, whoever keeps posting these emails, that's the real crime of Climategate. That's who we should be going after. Why haven't the police arrested him? Well, I will say this. This person deserves a ticker tape parade in New York City, because it has exposed one of the biggest cons of the 20th century and into the 21st century, the idea that man-made global warming is catastrophic and that all scientists agree. And it is beautiful to watch this unfold. One of the latest developments we just found out today was realclimate.org and NASA scientist who works with James Hansen, Gavin Schmidt, has come out and basically told the Climategate in these emails, says that they should make the data available in, quote, impenetrable as possible unquote. Now, this is a NASA scientist basically telling people, advising them, the Climategate scientists, that they should hide this information, conceal it from the public, but technically make it available, but make it impenetrable. This is a guy who won a climate science communication award by the American Geophysical Union last year, or actually earlier this year, and it was a man praised by New York Times reporter Andrew Revkin as a great communicator. And here he is, essentially advising other fellow ClimateGate scientists how to con the public. These are the prominent, prestigious scientists that the media would have the America look up to. It's pathetic. This is a motley band of scientists, and if this were any justice in the world, these scientists would be stripped of title, position, and they'd be exposed from their universities. But unfortunately, they raise so much money, they get so much federal grant money, that they will be protected to the end. And we saw that with Penn State. We saw that with how Joe Paterno's football team was never scrutinized, never held any scrutiny, never had any independent audits. And we see the same thing with Michael Mann at Penn State. We see the same thing at East Anglia University. We've seen the same thing with other ClimateGate scientists. It is just a sad state when it comes to that. But we've got to cut off the spigot. And that's what these emails show. They're actually, at one point, these scientists, when they won the Nobel Prize, are musing where the money's going to go. And they're talking about where they're going to hang their banner, which is fine. They're proud of winning the Nobel Prize. But then they talk about the scientists who quit in disgust of the IPCC because it was such a corrupt political organization, one of them being hurricane expert Chris Lancy. Others have included Roger Pilkey Sr. Others have included disease expert Paul Ryder. They've walked away from the organization because their work was twisted and fabricated for science. And they have the nerve, when they win the Nobel Prize, to mock these scientists by saying, oh, I bet they regret it now because they don't share part of this Nobel. This was about ego, money, glory, and it's about politics. What it is not about is climate science.
Well, you touch on the nerve there, I think, because absolutely it is pathetic to see the way that not only they were acting behind the scenes, but the way it's being covered up, of course, once again by the media. And unfortunately, we're going to, I think, see a lot of the exact same type of coverage as we saw in the first round of ClimateGate 1.0. And there's an excellent Joe Nova post that you linked to today about the whitewashes that we're likely to see in the different steps of them. But I also understand that the BBC has come in under even more scrutiny over the last few days over some of the revelations from these emails.
Yes, and the BBC, this is a whole nother scandal, which you won't hear much about, but they were actually involved. And here's a way you can imagine this. One analyst had said if the BBC had been paid by the oil industry to shoot down global warming theory, you think this would have been newsworthy by the fellow news media? They would have been going nuts on them. But what's happened here is the BBC sought advice from global warming scientists on the economy, on drama, on music. Green activist research spenders spent £15,000 on seminars for BBC executives trying to get them to block climate skeptics from the airwaves. And they largely succeeded. And the BBC was allowing this to happen to their reporters, to their executives, allowing them to be bought and influenced by this, and in the case of BBC reporters, they were actually changed articles after they had been written. So articles that said global temperature's high point was 1998, according to the UN, and environmental activists pressured them, and then they would end up changing the wording for that. I mean, the BBC served as the arm of the environmental lobby and would not go outside the bounds of that. And it's truly spectacular now. I mean, you could have all the accusations in the world, but we now have the emails and the back and forth correspondence. It is just an amazing thing to watch this. The problem is the information is so overwhelming, so detailed, so deep and rich that the average person can't absorb it all. I mean, I'm here living, breathing, eating it. And it's even hard for me to convey in a radio interview the depth and interest of all this. You're going to need books on it. And that's what there were books on the first ClimateGate. The problem this time around is global warming is low on the public opinion scale, even much lower in the media. Attendance at this year's Durban, South Africa conference is 70% at the current time from where it was 2 years ago in Copenhagen. So the problem is the public impact of ClimateGate 2.0 will necessarily be smaller, even though I think the information provided is more devastating than ClimateGate 1.0.
Well, in a way, that I suppose that's almost a positive sign, because as you point out, public interest in the alarmism is waning as people start to realize more and more of the politics that are being played here instead of the science itself. But I guess the shadow of Durban hangs over this ClimateGate release, just as the shadow of Copenhagen was hanging over the first ClimateGate release. So let's talk a little bit about Durban and what's going on there and what you expect to happen.
I'll just start with it. And Durban is a beach resort on the Indian Ocean, and it's a this is the, I think it's COP 17 Conference of Parties. It goes back to it goes back to the Kyoto Protocol, the leading up to that. They have it every year, and I've been to Johannesburg, South Africa. I've been to the Buenos Aires. I've been to Bali, which was the all-time greatest. I mean, we were at oceanfront beach resorts. I mean, one thing the UN knows how to do is throw a party. And this conference at this Indian Ocean beach resort in Durban, South Africa, supposed to be just one of the prettiest places you can go in the entire continent of Africa, is going to be a huge party. No one is expecting anything to come out of this. Everything is dead. Even most of the green activists are disgusted with President Obama because he didn't push it. He basically chose healthcare over climate, and they, you know, he's failed them because there's no international treaty right now. Kyoto Protocol is dead. They're now saying it could be 8 years before they could even resurrect it, and that's assuming there's still continued, you know, government and public interest in it. But what they've done in this opening so far in Durban is they're promoting what I call witchcraft or climate astrology. Christiana Figueres, the UN climate head at this summit, actually came out, and because they had a storm during the first day of this conference, she linked the storm to man-made global warming. And she said, and basically said, they never used to have weather like this in South Africa, and we actually had some researchers at the website Real Science. Exactly 83 years ago on the date, a very similar storm hit the region, and they've also had much more extreme weather in the back. It just shows you what's happened is they're now reaching a level of medieval witchcraft belief, where they'll say, we've never had weather like that until that witch moved in next door, except they're changing it to until you bought that SUV. And that's where we are. This is, one scientist actually said, the UN IPCC has now descended into the level of the Mayan calendar or Nostradamus. And that's where we are. When you have them making all these predictions, the science, not only is it not with them, it's the opposite. If you look at big tornadoes, we've actually gone down since the global cooling scare dramatically in the 1970s. If you look at droughts, hurricanes, floods, we're at or near historic tropical storm activity low, 30, 40-year low. We're now at, I think we're about to break the all-time U.S. record for a no major hurricane strike on landfalling in the U.S., as far back as records go, and I think that's going to be before the Civil War. If you look at droughts and floods, they were much worse, particularly droughts in the 1930s. This Texas drought they had, one of the tricks they play is that's the worst drought since 1950, and that may well have been true, but it certainly wasn't the worst drought if you go back another 20 years in the 1930s, down to the Dust Bowl era. I think it was at 1.80% of the central U.S. was in drought. They just play these little silly games. And now they're looking at every flood, tornado. Al Gore will tell you there's more tornadoes than ever. And you know what? That's true. We have more reporting of tornadoes. Why? Not because there's more tornadoes. As I already mentioned, the big tornadoes have dramatically declined since the 1970s. But because we have Doppler radar, satellites, we can detect storms and funnel clouds, and we can detect hurricanes, stuff you never could detect before, we can now find. And so what they do is they've cobbled this all together because they realize they weren't scaring people with temperature rise, and now they're trying to scare you with every storm is a proof of their theory. And they've gone to the point now, and you know this, James, where they're pointing to blizzards, record cold. Cold in Peru, according to the BBC, is proof of man-made global warming. The blizzard that hit the East Coast last year, 2 years ago, was proof of man-made global warming. Record snow in the Northern Hemisphere is more proof of man-made global warming, despite the fact that they're on record as predicting less snow. Snow is things of the past. Al Gore's film never predicted record cold and snow as a consequence of man-made global warming. But after the fact, whatever the weather, they always say it's exactly what we would have expected. This is akin to daily horoscopes now. And I plan on going to occupy Durban. I will be down there later this week. I'm going to be having fun. This is time for ridicule, mockery, and I have the belief that when someone is slipping and about to fall, you don't help them up. You kick them. You kick them when they're up. You kick them when they're down. And I plan on kicking the IPCC, the United Nations, when they're down. And we plan to have a great time mocking, ridiculing, getting in their face. We are going to occupy Durban. Climate Depot is going to occupy Durban.
Well, I like your spirit, and I think that's the exact right attitude to have, because there's really nothing left to do, I think, other than to mock and ridicule what has really become almost a pathetic, just a sad tale of these climatologists who have holed themselves up against the world, and they're being exposed for all to see. And I guess now is the time, if any, to really make the mockery of them before they finally disappear. But I think we have a little ways to go yet.
And they're still pulling silliness. They're saying, well, this was a warm year, given that it was a La Nina, and you know, it should have been much cooler. Well, now I think it's the 10th warmest year. In other words, it's not a cool, one of the coolest years of the 21st century was this year globally. And they'll still say things, depending on which source you use, all the 2005 or 2010 are tied for the hottest year on record. You know, I just dealt with this with a Washington Post reporter, Juliet Alpert, and I told her, have you even done basic elementary research? What they're claiming when they claim that, first of all, according to the UN, according to satellites, 1998 was the hottest, was the high point of temperatures in the last, you know, 13, 14 years. And we have not achieved that again. So it's basically temperatures have remained static or slightly dropped depending on your start and end point. Now, if you claim that 2005 or 2010 is the hottest years on record or they're tied, how do you possibly make that with a straight face? Well, it's a purely political statement. What do I mean by that? Even James Hansen, the corrupt NASA scientist who's endorsed a book calling for the deindustrialization of the United States and, you know, blowing up dams and leveling, you know, and leveling stuff to bring us back to a more primitive life, even he admits that it's not an important declaration, because what they've done is they're talking about differences in years, 2005, 2010, of hundreds of a degree Fahrenheit. Let me repeat that. Hundreds of a degree Fahrenheit, with temperature measurements that couldn't possibly get anywhere near the margin of error from what they're claiming. It is pure nonsense, hokum, silliness, and it's just, and they get away with it, you know, at least with the mainstream media. And it's just the silliest thing you ever heard. And yet, you know, we now have in peer-reviewed studies where they admit 1998 was a high point, and they now are trying to say that Chinese aerosols, because they're, you know, causing global dimming and going out into our atmosphere, are somehow blocking what we should have a much higher temperature, but we're saved by pollution. They can't keep their story straight at this point. And that is why they're shifting to extreme weather, because now we always have extreme weather. You're always going to have a flood, a drought, a hurricane, a tornado somewhere, some way, somehow, somewhere around the globe. So every day brings more proof of your theory. But guess what? You've ceased to be practicing science. And you, at that, and anyone who follows that at that point, any global warmist who believes that, is now in the realm of sorcery, of Nostradamus, and it's just a really sad day for science that the UN IPCC has now descended in this. And I love their latest report where it says it's virtually certain that the future will have this. Oh, really? And then we have Secretary Chu, the energy secretary for President Obama, actually say, for the first time in history, we now know what the world will be like 100 years from now. Science has advanced that much. Can you imagine someone who actually believes that? He belongs on a boardwalk with a deck of tarot cards, not being our Secretary of Energy making such silly statements. At any given time, science is always more advanced than it was in the past. For you then to believe you can make predictions of where the planet is going to be temperature-wise or atmospheric-wise 100 years from now, you need a crystal ball. You need a sorcerer's hat, not a job with the federal government.
Exactly right. And I find it interesting how the WMO comes out each year in November to say what the global temperature was for the year.
They try to estimate it before the end. They try to pick the right spot so they can make their stupid political. But no one cares anymore. I mean, even the media is barely covering that stuff. It's just, they've just reached the height of silliness at this point. And they're going to be shifting over to storms now. And the fact that they're telling people, you know, that tornado was caused by your SUV, that's sick. And beyond Lomberg, who at one time was a skeptic, then he became a muddled in between, then he became a warmist, then he sort of swung back to skeptic, and now no one cares what he is because he's all over the place. But he has what's called the Copenhagen Consensus. He did a lot of good work initially, but he has a guy named Thomas Schelling, a Nobel Prize winning economist, with his organization now. And he's actually said he sometimes wishes for a lot of horrid weather events, like more tornadoes, that would get people more believing in man-made global warming. In other words, they are ready to pounce if we have tornadoes, anyone dies. It is the most shameful level that science has descended to in this entire debate. People wishing death and destruction so they can try to sell their theory that has nothing to do with the tornadoes, according to all the latest available science. And in fact, if you believe them, you'd think that rising CO2 and or global warming would lower big tornadoes. But the science doesn't matter anymore. This is about selling a movement and fulfilling a narrative, and that's what we're finding out here. And I think there's one other mention I want to say is this new book by Donna Lafambrose, if I'm saying her name right, I'm sure I'm not. She's got the book out about the United Nations. It's called The Delinquent Teenager. And she goes through and just, it's devastating. The environmental activists and the scientists who wrote key reports for the UN IPCC, this was a sham from the beginning. It is unbelievable that even skeptics gave it as much respect as they did for all those years. And I worked in the United States Senate, and we actually, you know, by the fact that we didn't mock and ridicule it every day, shame on us that we even gave this piece of dirt report any time. And what's most shocking at all is the Republican President George Bush was appalling on this. George Bush funded the science. George Bush accepted the science. George Bush had appointees in his administration that were complete and total warmists, and it was just appalling to watch it. And the frightening thing is, with Newt Gingrich or Mitt Romney, we may end up with the same people that Bush had. Scary people like James Conaton, who went around and basically accepted everything the UN did and probably went a few steps beyond it, are already threatening to come back to Washington. We've got to stop the George Bush warmists from entering the government. We've got to stop Republican presidents from funding all of this claptrap science. And I don't know how to do it, given the two current frontrunners. I think it's a really sad situation.
It certainly is. We'll have to keep our eye on that to see how that develops. But I, in the meantime, I'm sure everyone's going to be interested in Durban and in your reporting from there. So if people want to follow what's going on from Durban, how can they follow what you're doing there?
We go on climatedepot.com. I'll be having daily, hourly reports and updates of what's going on down there, and I expect a lot of fun. The big news is I will be releasing my A to Z global warming report, and from A to Z, we're going to be showing that either the predictions are failing or actually going the opposite direction of what man-made global warming feared. And I'm talking everything from malaria to cholera to sea level to Mount Kilimanjaro to polar bears, to ocean heat content, right on down the line. We're going to have fun with it. We're going to have the sources, the peer-reviewed literature. It is just unbelievable. And what we've found is the global warmest, the more the real world fails. And let's not be mistaken, the European Space Agency, their global sea level has been pretty much steady since 2004, has dropped significantly in recent years. NASA has said global sea level has dropped the last 2 years. This is after we're supposed to be having these massive acceleration, these massive melting of all these glaciers. Where's all the water going? They've now come up with all these strange theories that the water is now going on land and that this is going to show up in sea level later. Then you have the global temperature, high point 98. You have polar bears, which are thriving. The Inuit up in the Arctic are telling us that. Mount Kilimanjaro, that was featured in Al Gore's film, is now gaining snow and ice. Cholera, malaria, dramatic improvements and dropping the death rate, despite the fact all the fear related to that. It is just a comedy of errors. So I'll be releasing that report at the United Nations, hopefully with Senator James Inhofe, and we're going to be taking that report right to him and mocking and ridiculing the IPCC, showing them no quarter and looking for any kind of debate. Of course, they don't like to debate there at all. So, and of course, I want to add that I will be enjoying the Durban Beach Resort as well. And that's one of the only thing I have nice to say about the UN are their choice of venues. I went to Nairobi, Kenya. I got to go on safaris. I've been in Bali, Indonesia. And they usually pick very exotic locales. And they actually did a thing where global warming bureaucrats and scientists are one of the most well-traveled individuals in the world. And you can actually see that in these ClimateGate 2.0 emails where they're talking back and forth. Just got back from Tahiti, and now I'm off to whatever. All these exotic locations they pick at some of the nicest hotels in the world And they dine on the nicest foods and the nicest liquor. And this is what they do when they're saving the planet. It's a great job if you can get it.
Well, I guess if we can go around mocking them, I guess we can ride off those coattails. But I certainly hope you're buying your carbon offsets.
I do admit, I guess I'm sounding a little, you know, that's part of the problem here. But, you know, I need to go and monitor them. So, you know, I'll bring my sunblock.
All right. Excellent. All right. Well, Mark Morano, always a pleasure talking to you. And it's great to see that the tide has really turned. And now we're just waiting for the inevitable end. So I hope people will keep their eye on climatedepot.com for more as this develops. So thank you so much for your time today. It's always great talking to you.
Thank you very much. And we have to be worried about the U.S. EPA and the funding that continues to this. So it's always hard to declare the end to something that keeps getting this kind of funding. But thank you very much, James.